Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome to everybody from Scary Cats, broadcasting live from Hollywood, Camden, South Carolina, Emerald Isle, and we have our guest in Fargo, North Dakota. This is Dr. John, and glad to have everyone here with us for the biggest, scariest overnight hour of the week. So anyway, glad to be here, and I want to welcome my co-host, Devin Tate. How are you doing tonight?
Thank you, Dr. John. I'm doing great here in rainy Hollywood, California. We got the rains just a few weeks too late.
Oh, yeah, because of all the fires and everything. How is all that going? Are the fires, have they subsided? We haven't seen a lot in the news. Have they subsided now?
Yeah, well, they've definitely subsided from the news. I the ones that were nearby here have subsided. So now what they're worried about is mudslides because of all the rain.
Wow. Well, all I got to say is we wish you the best on that, and glad to have you here from Hollywood. It's beautiful out there, and dark, not sunny just yet because we're late at night here. But thanks for being here with us. Our buddy Papa.
Well, thank you.
Emerald Isle, how's everything in Emerald Isle, Papa Stroh? Is it cold like it is in Camden?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And then some. That's why I'm indoors. Aha. So, yeah, I also like, I've been keeping everybody in Cali in my thoughts and prayers for sure. And I'm really glad things are looking much better for you all for sure.
Yeah, thank you. Definitely. Thank you so much.
Yep, we're glad things are getting better over there. Well, tonight we have a very special guest because she's a wonderful friend of ours, live from Fargo, North Dakota, one of the amazing She Squatchers. In fact, she became such a wonderful friend of mine and Papa Stroh's at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference here about 6 weeks ago. Ladies and gentlemen, let's give a warm welcome to Jennifer Cruz. How are you doing, Jen, tonight?
Hey, I'm good, you guys. Thanks for having me on the show.
Oh, always glad.
Thank you, yeah.
Yeah, yes. Jen,
it's always
the She Squatcher.
Yep. We're glad to have you. Now, Jen, we're fortunate to have such a well-traveled, popular lady here with us who has got one of the very important Bigfoot hunting in the country, if not the world. And what makes you unique is your whole group is, as we say in the mountains of North Carolina, a bunch of girls, and you go out and do great work. So how long ago did you start the Sea Squatchers? And tell us a little bit about what got you interested in Bigfoot.
Well, we started the team in 2015. And it all was inspired by cryptozoologist Lauren Coleman. He's got the Bigfoot Museum out of Maine. And I scored an awesome interview with him on my radio, my old radio show. And while I was interviewing him in person, I'm going to be honest, I didn't believe in Bigfoot.
Okay,
and I didn't
well.
Know much about Bigfoot either. But he was a great interview, and I was excited to have him on my show. And as I was interviewing him, just all the wonderful things that he was saying, and he was so scientific and so interesting and so passionate about Bigfoot that I was becoming interested in Bigfoot, just listening to what he had to share. And it was his idea to send women into the woods without men, dogs, or guns. And he felt that that would be the recipe for success when it comes to Bigfoot for various reasons. And he listed those reasons, and he said that, women have a natural good rapport with the great apes, you know, such as Jane Goodall's work with the chimpanzees. And he and various other women who did work with the great apes. And he felt that would naturally extend also to Bigfoot. He also said that men have a pheromone that the great apes just don't like. And he thought that might also apply to Bigfoot. And he said that a lot of the times when we see, when there are sightings of Bigfoot near the roads, we typically don't see family units crossing the road. It's usually just one Bigfoot on his own. It's usually a young male. And he says, you know, they're probably striking out on their own, doing the things they're not supposed to be doing, checking out the areas they're not supposed to go. And he felt that they would naturally be more attracted to a bunch of women without any threats being present, like men, dogs, or guns. So he thought that they would naturally just come closer to women out in the woods. And so those are some of the reasons he cited that he thought that sending women into the woods without men, dogs, and guns would be a recipe for success with Bigfoot. So, you know, at first when I heard this, I was like, hey there, big boy. And I naturally, jokingly volunteered on the radio. But by the end of the interview, I was like, hey, you know what? I seriously volunteer. By the end of the interview, I volunteered to do this. And when other people were hearing this, they're like, I want to be on your team. And so pretty soon a team was formed, and we started going out looking for Bigfoot. Now, I grew up in the state of Minnesota in the woods, walking in the woods by myself as a child and as my mom, and never in a million years did I ever see anything that would lead me to believe that Bigfoot was real. And the woods that I was walking in, there should have been Bigfoot there. So, I mean, I really didn't think that Bigfoot was here. But on our very first expedition out, I was really shocked to find footprints and to actually have an experience where rocks were being thrown at us at night out of the trees from above. And, you know, growing up in Minnesota, spending my whole life in the woods, nothing had ever thrown rocks at me before. I know that there's no critters out there that do that. And so, you know, it was just shocking to me. And, you know, we did have some scary moments. And I got to tell you, it's probably the most addicting thing I've ever done in my life.
So you just
other Bigfooters will tell
you. Out there and hang out with your friends and looking for Bigfoot.
Yes, yes. And it gets kind of scary sometimes out in the dark. But, you know, it is so addicting and it is so fun that you just want to get right back out there again. And so now this is what I do for fun, and it's my passion, and I can't. I can tell you that if you had told me this 5 years ago that I would be out looking for Bigfoot, I probably would have asked you what you were smoking. This is not what I imagined for my life, but I can't tell you how much I enjoy it. It's just so much fun. And
well,
I'm very blessed to be able to do that.
You're out there with your friends. You're out there in nature, and you're exploring something that we haven't found him yet or her, but we'll find him
right?
One day. That was so funny. You were talking about how it might be typically the young Bigfoot going out on his own, crossing the road and everything. That sounds like the standard teenager, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah.
It does. Mm-hmm. And, of course, the standard teenage boy would be more interested in a bunch of women. What's that going on there?
Exactly, and wandering around. Yeah, that's great. Now
yeah.
Wandering around. Yeah. Wandering around.
Yeah, there's something.
Oh man.
There's something interesting about
that's
the
funny.
Way, there's something interesting about how you hunt for Bigfoot, and I have never heard of another group doing it this way. But you use something called remote viewing to check out your site and check out areas before you shoot. And I've spoken with a lot of people, especially in the last week, about remote viewing. And you are an expert in that, Ben. Could you tell us a little bit about remote viewing and how do you use that in combination with what to do to go out in the woods to hunt for Bigfoot?
Well, Dr. John, when Lauren Coleman gave us the idea, of course, I started coming up with my own additional ideas for how we should look for Bigfoot. And, you know, I'd been working as a psychic medium and doing some missing persons work quite successfully with remote viewing, and had found helped to find some people. And so I thought, I wonder if we could use some of that in the process of looking for Bigfoot. Could we nail down the area where Bigfoot is before we ever get there? And so every time we go out, it's like a new experiment. You know, I have different ideas of how we could potentially use various remote viewing techniques or psychic abilities in looking for Bigfoot and getting us closer to him. Now, when you look at my team, you know, we're probably not the big burly woodsy guys that can be out in the woods for weeks at a time without being in civilization. That's not us. That's not us. We're more the type that, you know, we're gonna find the quickest way to get there. And if I can get us close in a car and pop out and say, surprise, here we are, that's what I'm gonna do, because I think surprise is part of our game plan. I think that people walk by Bigfoot all the time and don't even notice them. But if you know that there's a Bigfoot there and you're looking for him, you're going to be a lot more aware of that. And so I think that when people come walking by, you know, I think a lot of times they just stay still, or they lay down flat on the ground, or, you know, they hide behind something. But you know, they just kind of have to hold their own until the people pass by, because they're not really looking for them. They don't notice them. But here we are. We're coming in. And, for instance, when we were in Tennessee at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference, we went out looking for Bigfoot with Matthew Delf. Now, he led the Bigfoot expedition was going in conjunction with the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference. And so my team went out with him during the day with the people who were signed up for that, and then we went back out at night without those people, and having coordinates to look at. I was like, hoo-hoo, look at, there's Bigfoot there and there and there. And so we went back out there, and when we parked the car, I pulled open my phone and started looking at satellite imagery of where I am, and I saw a Bigfoot about 20 to 30 feet from the car. And all I needed to know was which way is north. Tammy pointed the FLIR thermal camera in that direction, and sure enough, there was something there. And what it looked like was a gorilla sitting on the ground doing something with his arms, with something on the ground. And didn't even attempt to try to hide from us, just kind of stayed there and was moving around, almost like it was unaware that we were looking at it. So, I mean, how exciting is that? And Matthew was going to go back up there, and Matthew Delf from MECRO, Mountain Empire Cryptic Researchers Organization, and he was going to go back up there and just make sure that there was nothing there that could have been that. But this thing was moving, and it was just pretty cool. And I've been getting on Jenna to hurry up and edit those videos so that we could put them on our YouTube channel. And I was just on her about that tonight, so I know she's working on it now. And so we can get those uploaded so everybody can see those, because they're quite interesting to see that. And again, that was like 20, 30 feet from the car at where we parked. And so what's really fun with that is, you know, that was probably the first time where I was remote viewing in the moment and seeing in the moment where things are right now. And, you know, because what I see on the screen changes according to what's going on. And when we've been out in the woods where we've been looking before, I wasn't pulling out my phone every 2 seconds to look at it, to see, you know, what I'm seeing now on the remote view. What am I seeing now on the remote view? And so this was a new experiment, and it worked. As far as I'm concerned, it worked. So, I mean, that was pretty exciting for us. And I can't wait to get those videos put up on our YouTube channel. So for people who are listening to this later, it might be uploaded later when you listen. So you want to check out our YouTube channel and just look us up at She Squatchers Official. There are two channels there, to go for the one with the most videos, because the other one we lost control of a long time ago. And we don't even know how to shut it down. So, So she Squatches Official. And we've got other videos up there too. We found, you know, strange lights that were, I mean, weird lights in the woods that there couldn't have been anything back there. It was surrounded by marshy bog and no roads or any kind. And the property, you know, we couldn't get permission to go back there because they said it was dangerous to go back there. You could fall through the bog and drown. but yet there was
light
in the woods. I know. So we were looking at it from a distance at night with a unocular, which can see far distances away in night vision. And, you know, we had been investigating a Bigfoot report that somebody had seen Bigfoot walking between these set of trees through the bog and from the road during the day. And so we were looking at this from a distance with this equipment at night. And there was these strange lights that came. So it was really, really bizarre. And, you know, I couldn't explain it. I kept thinking, is there a road behind that? I was looking. There is no road behind that. It was just really, really a strange occurrence with these strange lights that just appear. And you know, over and over again, when you talk to Bigfoot researchers, whether, you know, wherever they're from, they could be the most down-to-earth, flesh-and-blood Bigfooters, not even about anything paranormal or woo. But if they've been researching long enough, they start seeing these lights too. And, if, you know, they'll admit to you, even in private, maybe they won't say it publicly, but privately they'll tell you that they think there's a connection between these lights and Bigfoot, but they just don't know what it is. But, you know, they've experienced it too many times to call it a coincidence anymore. So, you know, there's so many questions having to do with Bigfoot and all the weird things that sometimes happen with Bigfoot. It always just leaves us with more questions than answers. And that's, I think, part of the addicting part of it. You want to know more. Every time you go out, you want to know more. And you can't wait to get back out there again.
Yeah.
So, But
you use remote viewing, and I wanted to talk a little, just a little bit about that, because that's a topic that we don't really hear a lot about much anymore. Now, about 12, 15 years ago, there was a huge flurry of information and talking about remote viewing. And it came from folks like Joe McMonagle, Russell Targ, and Ingo Swann. And a lot of it was in relation to the Stargate Project, which the federal government funded at Stanford Research Institute out in California. And they got these very, very talented psychics. And they said, we've got them here to look over enemy lines and tell us what's going on. And after several years, and then all of a sudden, here came the publicity. They said, well, it didn't really work very well, and so we stopped it. And that was a real passing the buck notion, because it worked apparently very well. I spoke with some of the participants. And I'm going to give, I guess, my definition of what remote viewing is and how it works. And then, Jen, if you wouldn't mind, tell us a little bit about how you look at and perceive remote viewing. It's simply a matter of, I think this came from Joe McMonagle, close your eyes and you focus on a target. And then you start seeing what's going on in that particular area, whether it's the next room, next door, the next block, or the next country over. And you just start seeing things in your head and you start either writing down impressions or drawing pictures of what you see. And now, is that how you approach and look at remote viewing?
No, what I'm doing, I call it geographic remote viewing. I use either Google Maps or Google Earth. So I focus on looking at a satellite image of a location. So I'm looking down at a location and I'm scanning, basically I'm scanning a location, asking questions. And so for instance, when I would do this previously for paranormal teams, when they would go looking into investigate a haunted location, I would get the GPS coordinates of the location and look at it and just ask questions about what was happening there. The information that would come through was very, very, very specific. And it was right. Very odd, bizarre information that would mostly almost never be true was coming through and just seemed very bizarre. But to find out later, it was actually very true. So, this I thought, could I use this in looking for Bigfoot? So I started scanning the woods in areas that I felt would be a good Bigfoot location and asking if there was Bigfoot here or Bigfoot evidence that we could collect here. And what I would see on the satellite image would change in reaction to the question that I asked, if there was something there that could be was in response to my question. Like, if there was Bigfoot there, I would start to see a Bigfoot there. And I would often see the face of the Bigfoot. What is that? That's really loud. I would often see the face of the Bigfoot to show me, like, what kind of Bigfoot it was. Was it an aggressive male? Was it more of a friendly, curious one? And so that way I could identify, you know, I probably don't want to go near that one. That one looks kind of mean. So that one makes me feel scared. So I don't want to go near that one. But this one over here looks okay, you know? So it wouldn't just show me where Bigfoot is. It would show me the kind of the demeanor of that Bigfoot at the time. So that kind of helps too, I guess. And I had asked if there was Bigfoot evidence we could collect here in one particular location, and a whole area just lit up this golden light color. And I didn't know what it was exactly that we were going to find there, but we found a huge, huge den-like stick structure that had been weaved together right there. And I'm talking huge, like the size of an aisle in Walmart. It was absolutely huge, and it was more than one, you know. There were some areas up above that it was 2-3 stories high in some areas. There were like towers in it, like lookout points and things like that. And it was just a really bizarre structure that we found. And literally navigated us on this very tiny, very almost undrivable trail. It really, you know, most people would never take their vehicle down this trail. Because I did scratch my car up pretty good driving down it. Because it was a homemade little trail through the woods made by some native people who were looking for downed trees that they could use for their firewood. And so, I'd have to get out of the car and move trees out of the road. It wasn't even a minimum maintenance road. It wasn't even a real road. And I navigated us along this little trail and parked us 75 feet from that stick structure that I saw in the remote view that was showing up as Bigfoot evidence we could collect. So, I mean, it's working for us. The strategy of using remote viewing to see if we can get closer to Bigfoot. And what was really cool is that when we went there, I had seen an aggressive male Bigfoot about 200 feet from that stick structure. And it was on the other side of the trail. And so when we first got out of the car, I was looking towards that area where the aggressive male was, who I had felt kind of scared of when I saw his face. And I was looking that way, and I took one or two steps towards walking into the woods there, and rocks were thrown down at me right away. And I don't think it was the aggressive male. I think it was the other ones that were saying, don't go that way. Don't go that way.
So they were guiding me away from a potentially dangerous area.
I feel that they were, yes. Yes. And I didn't question it. I was like, well, duh, what was I thinking? Why am I even thinking of going that way? You know? So, and then I went around to the other side and started going towards the Bigfoot evidence that we could collect. And that's where we found that big, huge stick structure that had been, it was very den-like. It was huge and very, very intricate. It was just amazing. And it was very deep on an Indian reservation, a closed Indian reservation. There are only two of those left in the United States. And what that means is they have their own hunting laws. So hunting is all the time. No hunter would ever have built this, especially near something that could be driven down, because they would get shot if they were trying to use something like that as a blind. So, because the way they hunt there is they hunt from moving trucks and they shine into the woods. So if it's within so many feet of a trail that somebody could drive, you would never put up a hunting blind. They don't even hunt like that up there ever. They don't make blinds or tree stands or anything like that up there. It's totally not how they hunt. And hunting is year-round. They have no hunting season up there. So it's always hunting season. So we have to be mindful of that, too, when we're up there looking for Bigfoot, that, you know, somebody could drive by with guns up and out, and that's happened to us before. And I've warned my team of that before, you know, and they're like, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then the first time that a truck full of hunters drove by with hunters in the back of the truck with their guns up and, you know, and out on top of the hood of the truck as they drove by, they were just, you know, I looked at them and their mouths just dropped open like, wow, you know, they really do that. Yes, they do. So we have to be ready for that. So we just can't look like deer in the woods. That's all. So, but
you mentioned, and that's an interesting thing. Do people really go in the woods with guns trying to shoot Bigfoot? Is that something that they really try to do?
I think that there are people who try to do that. I don't personally know them, and I wouldn't recommend doing that. I definitely wouldn't recommend doing that. You know, there are people too. You know, there are people too. You wouldn't want somebody coming with a gun and shooting you or your family. You know, why? Obviously, these Bigfoot are peaceful creatures. Otherwise, we'd have people being mauled all the time. You know, they go out of their way to avoid humans at all costs. And I think that shows there that they have a really high level of intelligence to know that they should avoid us. You know, I'm sure we are easy targets if they were really hungry. And yet they avoid us. So I think that shows that they have a really high level of intelligence. And I know that they have family units. Obviously they do. I've heard stories of children who were, I heard a story of a guy who was, when he was a child, he was running away, and he ran away through this swamp. And he got into an area where he was having trouble keeping his chin above the water, and he was kind of stuck in the muck. And he was screaming, and all of a sudden this racket came out of the woods and stomp, 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 and something came and picked him up out of the water and walked him right back up to the road and put him down in the ditch and just kind of stood there. And he looked at it, and he said it stunk so bad, and it was a large female Bigfoot. And he said it looked at him like it felt sorry for him and basically saved him from drowning in the swamp and brought him back to the ditch by the road. So, I mean, I felt when I heard that story that it was true, and that this female Bigfoot, her motherly instincts kind of kicked in and went to save this child, and, you know, saw him what probably similar to her own children and wanted to save this child. So, and she didn't just drop him off and run away. She stood there and let him look at her and to see that she was feeling concerned and felt sorry for him. And then she walked away. So, I mean, that could have been lunch. That could have been lunch for her whole family, but that's not how it went down. You know, I think that they have family units and they have feelings and that they're very intelligent, and we should not be hunting them. We definitely should not be hunting them. Nobody should be hunting them. And perhaps if the government is covering up that they exist, perhaps it's because they know that people will try to go hunt them. More people would go if they felt that they really were out there. But you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I don't know. Yeah.
Well, you did say something that, again, it piqued my interest about the government knows and the government doesn't want them to be hunted. But then, you know, we have so many government cover-ups. We do. And Papa Stroh and Devin, I'd like you to join in. If you have any thoughts about this, I mean, I'm seeing, you know, it gets to the point there are so many government cover-ups, and it used to be if you would say anything about them, you know, you would disappear from view. But it's getting to where you can just say things about it, and it's like the government, they've got more important, they've got bigger fish to fry than to talk about, than to come after individuals like they used to. And we were talking a little earlier tonight on Pop Culture Stars, and I mentioned the fact that the Admiral Richard T. Byrd interview on television in the mid-50s when he talked about the land beyond the poles, which is essentially the idea of the hollow earth. I mean, there was a lot of controversy about that. And when a fellow tried to publish information about the hollow earth in the magazine Flying Saucers, some really strange things happened. The government, well, I don't know if it was the government or whatever, but all of a sudden his shipment of magazines didn't come in. A shipment of magazines that did come in and were delivered to a store, well, the magazines and the owner of the store disappeared. And that's frightening. And Jen, you know, and Devin and Papa Stroh, just please join in. Jen, have you seen what you would say might be evidence of government cover-ups about the Bigfoot community?
Well, I think when we think of cases like Claudia Ackley's case, where she had seen her, she was out hugging with her two daughters in the woods in California, and they ran into a few Bigfoots there. And when she called the California Fish and Game to report this, you know, they sent somebody out right away, and the conservation officer had her supervisor on listening via remotely to her report. And then the supervisor told her what to tell her was that she saw a bear. And it just sounds to me like so similar to when people used to report UFOs and they'd say, well, what you saw was a weather balloon. It was a weather balloon, or it was gases in the swamp, or, you know, whatever. And it obviously was not that. And how they just completely disregard the idea that you know what you saw. You were close enough to see it, and there was multiple people there who saw it. And you know what a bear looks like. It definitely was not a bear. And yet they still insist to you that what you saw was a bear. I just think, why do they do that? Why do they insist on telling you that what you saw was a bear? It just blows my mind. Why would they do that if they? It doesn't make any sense to me. They must know that it's there, and they're just trying to convince you that it was something else than what you saw, because they don't want you to continue looking for that or to continue spreading that idea. Whatever the reason is, I think that they try to divert the idea away from Bigfoot. And I don't understand why they do that. You know, people have put out the idea that it could be hard on the logging industries if they came out and said the Bigfoot was real. You know, then there might be a whole other aspect of protecting areas for Bigfoot, just like, you know, sometimes there's areas where the spirit bear in Washington State had been protected because it was a new species that was identified, and all of a sudden they couldn't log this whole area anymore because of this new species living there, a bear. So, you know, that could put the logging industry at risk, potentially, of being more regulated. And so that could be one of the reasons. But I don't exactly know all the reasons why they could have. I haven't spent a lot of time thinking about what all the possible reasons they could have for trying to cover it up. I hear people talking about how Bigfoot can potentially be some type of an alien or interdimensional being, and that could be one of the reasons why they're covering it up. just like to cover up the idea that there could be some type of space aliens or interdimensional aliens that aren't necessarily from here visiting our planet or our dimension. And, you know, they cover that up. Because I totally believe in that. I totally believe that happens. And I
well,
think
Jen,
you agree with me, Dr. John.
Yeah. I'm sure Dr. John, this is Devin. I'm just going to chime in now because I don't know as much about Bigfoot. I'm not as well-versed as Dr. John and others are, but the whole theory about sending women out because the Bigfoot might respond differently to women, you know, that have a naturally kind of a nurturing aura about them, it really makes sense to me, and I think that idea has a lot of merit. So I'm just curious, like, if you had an encounter sometime where a Bigfoot did approach you and it was clear that they wanted to communicate with you, would you be ready for that? And, like, what are their theories about how to communicate? I'm just curious about if you took it to that level.
Okay, so our very first time out when we went out during the day, and then I picked areas that I wanted to return to after dark that night. And so the area that I chose that I felt had a different energy feeling than what I have felt before, ever, I said I want to come back to this area, even though we didn't find anything there that was showing any Bigfoot evidence at the time. I just felt like it had an interesting energy feeling that I had not felt before. And when I say that, I feel it as a physical sensation in my body. So, I mean, it was just definitely unique. So we went back there at night. One of my teammates had borrowed a FLIR thermal camera from someone, and she didn't get really good instructions on how to use this thing. So all she knew was that you pull the trigger and it takes a picture. She didn't know that it could take video, and therefore I didn't know it could take video either. And so we get to the location, and there were five of us along that night. And it was pitch dark out there. You couldn't see anything. There was no ambient light whatsoever. Just, you couldn't see the hand in front of your face. It was so dark. And everybody had their gear in the back of the truck, in the back hatch. Except for me, I had mine on my body. And so she handed me this FLIR thermal camera, and I'm scanning the woods out in front of the, you know, I'm standing towards the front of the vehicle, and I'm scanning the woods to the right of the vehicle, and then I keep scanning, and now I'm scanning the road in front of the vehicle, and everybody else was in the back getting their equipment out of the back hatch. And all of a sudden, I see this image standing on the road out in front of the vehicle, and it's lighting up as a body temperature, and it's definitely humanoid-shaped. And I immediately assumed one of my teammates had grabbed her gear and walked out in front of the car. I said, oh, who's in front of the car? And nobody answered. And I said, who's in front of the car? And nobody answered. And I continued to ask this question with more anxiety in my voice. And until one of my teammates, Marlo, had heard that something was going on, and she runs up and she looks in the direction that I'm pointing the thermal camera. And she says, oh, my gosh, I just saw eyes. And so I look up from the screen on this camera to see if I can see eyes. And when I look back down, I can no longer find the image. And I scanned all over and couldn't find it anymore. But there was definitely someone standing there giving off a body temperature. But what was interesting after the fact was that when I looked at my teammates with this thermal camera, their body showed up at different body temperatures where they were wearing clothing. Where they were wearing clothing. This didn't have clothing on.
Okay.
So, because, you know, right, when you look at somebody with a thermal camera, they show up, their body temperature shows up. But if they're wearing clothing, it's not as hot right there. So it shows up as a different color. This was all showing up the same color, so it didn't have clothes on. That was quite interesting.
Okay.
So basically, that was upon getting out of the car. So whatever it was checking us out as immediately upon us getting out of the car.
Wow.
So I think that there is some merit to that because it was definitely checking us out. And that wasn't the only thing that happened there. There was lots of other things that happened there too, but I mean, that was definitely interesting that it was checking us out immediately upon getting out of the car.
Okay. You know, I want to get back to the government cover-up idea, because I think that's interesting, and I hope that four of us will still be around next week to talk about this. But you know, the idea that they, whoever they are, don't want us to blow the whistle or whatever, and they want to keep this into a little bit of a controlled environment. I know Matt Bell has talked about the fact that he's been up in a number of places, like in High Knob and in Klingon's Dome especially. And they do not, you know, you ask some of the rangers there about Bigfoot and everything, and some of them, some of the younger ones that don't know they're not supposed to, they'll say, well, you know, we've seen reports, we've seen things like this, and they're free to tell, but some of the ones that have been around a little bit more, they're very, very guarded. Now, Papa Strode, who's with us tonight, and Papa Strode, I'm gonna mention something that may not might not be a happy thing, but it's not, you let me know. But you have been a professional wrestler, pretty much your entire adult life. And the government one day decided that professional wrestling was entertainment. Isn't that correct?
Well, whether some are awake to what's really going on in the world or not, I mean, we live in like a... It's just like a novel, 1984, if you've read the novel 1984, in which, you know, we have programming on television that literally programs us to believe a certain way. And there's just a lot of us that don't really think for ourselves and just, like, go by every little detail that's shown us by television or radio and vice versa. And with... With wrestling, it's just like mixed martial arts. For the longest time in the United States, mixed martial arts was outlawed because of the violent content. And now look what it is today with the popularity of Strikeforce, UFC, and various other MMA promotions. I mean, really, they've really caught on. And wrestling, it's always been around, but it's gone through peaks and valley stages, just like any other business. And to where, but it's just like, even with the wrestling, you know, we tell stories to the people in, you know, like almost like we're almost programming them to a certain way, to who to cheer, who to boo, and just like you see in the news and the media, who to cheer, who to boo, who to praise, who to ridicule. And vice versa, just like in the novel 1984, when he said 2 + 2 = 5, and we darn well know 2 + 2 = 4. But if they tell you 1 + 3 = 10, then we're apt to believe what they're saying, most of us, right? It's all a programming deal. And like with the Bigfoot issue, there's so many possibilities to what Bigfoot actually could be, and we've discussed some of those possibilities already, like Jen said earlier on. Jen, I was wanting to ask you also, what's your opinion about the habitat of a Bigfoot? Does a Bigfoot hunt and eat like all of us, like us mortals? Do you think this is they don't need consumption? They're like beyond. They're more of a spiritual entity. I mean, what's your thoughts on how they survive?
That's a really good question, and although I've thought about that quite a bit, you know, in the area where we found that den-like stick structure, we did see evidence of digging, like digging with hands or digging into the ground for something. So I don't know if they were looking for grubs or whatever they were looking for, but there was digging going on. And in the area where we were looking on this reservation, there aren't a lot of deer. There really just aren't. So I'm tempted to say that they probably fish. And in that particular area, that there is a garbage dump that is probably within half a mile or less through the woods. And the bears, the black bears there, eat at this garbage dump constantly. And I have every reason to believe that Bigfoot does too, because it is such a big food source for the bears. I think that Bigfoot also eats there too in after dark. And so much so that I took my team, Jenna and I, well, it was just Jenna and I that time, but we had a stakeout at the garbage dump. and we were there for, 7 or 8 hours straight one day and into the night and overnight. And, I was hoping that being there long enough, the bears would get used to us being there, and they did. They did. They just completely ignored the fact that we were there. And so the fact that baby bears were coming in there with their mothers and not even looking at us anymore. I started having a sneezing fit, and they didn't even look over at me. So, they got used to us being there and realized that we weren't a threat. And they just started completely ignoring the fact that we were there. And so when we first got there, we stayed in the car and we had the windows open. And then we were starting to get out of the car. And they completely ignored the fact that we were there. So that was pretty neat. But when the sun went down and it was really, really dark, and there's no, street lights there, it's just really, really dark. One of us had, we were one team member short that time. We had hoped to have her along and it didn't work out. So it was a little, I felt like we were shorthanded that night. So one of us looking through night equipment, able to see in the dark, and the other one was not. And was just using, regular eyes. Because once you look through some of that equipment, you cannot see anything with your regular eyes anymore. It just blinds you because that equipment is so bright and hurts your eyes. So Jenna was looking through the night equipment, and I was looking with my regular night vision, my own night eyes. And there was one bear. We had four large bears around us, and there was one that got within about 10 feet of us before I saw it. And I'm like, Jenna, there's a bear coming. Turn on the light. So, and then it, as soon as we turned on the light, it walked away from us. But I don't know if it forgot that we were there or it was just coming to check us out, or I don't know. But it wasn't like attacking us. It was just walking straight for us, and it was about 10 feet away. But,
wow.
I had hoped that we would be able to catch something Bigfooty there, but we didn't. I think that's their food source. Is that garbage dump? I really do, because it's so close to their habitat where we found that they were living. So I think that could be part of it. Perhaps they're living on mushrooms and, I don't know what they're living on. The whole area is surrounded by water, so they could absolutely be fishing. But other than that, I really don't know what they could be living on. I've thought about that some, because it's, some of the same things that the natives live on are wild rice and maple syrup and, things like that. Natural growing berries, things like that. But I don't know that there would be a lot of that out there enough to support that big of a community. So it would be really hard to say other than that garbage dump I think is probably their main food source. And I've heard reports of Bigfoot at garbage dumps on Indian reserves in, First Nations reserves in Canada, that they've been reported there quite often. So I have every reason to believe that they utilize those types of things. And so that's what we've been looking into up there.
Did you think they're more carnivorous, or do you think they're more of the plant eaters, kind of like the brontosauruses with the dinosaurs?
I think it's probably a mixture of both, just like we are.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I do. I know for sure that they eat fish because there's so many reports of fishermen being out fishing at, you know, close to dark, and then the Bigfoot kind of getting aggressive with them. And what they want is them to hand over the fish. They want them to hand over the fish. So once they hand over the fish, then they leave them alone. So they're basically saying, give me the fish.
Right.
So, sometimes people don't understand that. So, but, you know, for anybody listening, if you encounter a Bigfoot, if you've been fishing and he's being a little aggressive towards you, give him the fish. That's all he wants.
Yeah, right. And, you know, Bob is sure this is a good line of questioning. And it ties into something that happened tonight. I have a store or a store location in Camden, South Carolina. It's at a place called Artist's Attic. It is run by Doc Goodwin. She is a medical, intuitive, and spiritual drummer. Now, I've never seen spiritual drumming before, but she did a sample of it for a lady tonight. It was unbelievable. Now, Jen, you probably have seen someone drum for someone else to make them feel better spiritually and everything else. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah.
And I was just wondering if you thought, because I have spoken with David Becerra of the Georgia Bigfoot Experience, and he is going to work with me and Matt and some others to put together a Georgia Bigfoot conference. Do you think it would be worthwhile to bring a medical, intuitive, and spiritual drummer as we go out to look for Bigfoot and see if that wouldn't make a difference in terms of whether or not we found Bigfoot? What do you think about that? I mean, I'm going to explore this more because when I saw her do it, it was like a life-changing 3 minutes. I said, this really worked. And I saw the lady that she did the sample for. She completely changed it, the way she said, oh, I feel completely different. And I saw what Dot did, and it was incredible. In fact, I went back to Devin, and I wanted her to do some drumming for us to let people see the power of this natural way to approach healing. But what do you think, Ken? Do you think something like this might be a way to communicate with Bigfoot?
Well, Tammy on our team, she's a medical intuitive, and I have drums. Now, we haven't incorporated drumming into any of that yet, I guess. I don't know, Dr. John. I'm not sure about that one. I'm not sure. I think that in areas where maybe if it's an Indian reservation where Native Americans are commonly drumming, they might be used to that kind of thing. Typically when we're going looking in our home state of Minnesota, you know, we're often going to Indian reservations, and that's where we look a lot. And that's where we have a lot of our luck in finding things. And I am part Native American, so, you know, we incorporate some of that into it. But we haven't done any drumming in our looking. But I don't know. I think that would really alert a lot of things that you were there. Might change a lot of what the natural sounds are, you know, the natural animal sounds.
Well, why don't you and I discuss that? And it's something I can discuss with Dot, who's here in Camden. And, you know, maybe she can come join us in Georgia. Maybe the She Squatchers can. We're going to try to work to have and you know, we can talk about it and see if we think that it was a reasonable thing. So, why don't we leave that as an open question, and you and I can talk about it. We can come back here and answer the question sometime.
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, good. Well, I'll tell you what, we are, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, we are down to 5 minutes for our hour of jury cast. And it's been wonderful talking to you, Jen. And I guess as Papa Stro has been a great teacher for me. He runs a wonderful, wonderful show called WCW Retro, and he knows how to handle things. So what we normally do in our last couple of minutes of the evening is we let people promote what they've got going on. So I will go in the following order. I'll go Devin, and then I'll go Papa Stro, and then I'll go with Jen, our guest, to just say what are you working on, and what's going on, and what would you like us to think about and come visit you. So Devin, what you got going on
sure.
in West Hollywood?
Yeah, thank you, Dr. John. First, I just want to say it's been great talking to Jen tonight. It's been so fascinating, and it's brought about a lot of questions that I want to look into different things now. So it's been great talking to you. I just got back from Tokyo. That's why I was gone last week. So that was really crazy. But now I'm getting ready for our Jollywood, which is our holiday pop-up winter festival. That's going to take place on December 8th in Hollywood, right by Hollywood and Vine. So if you're in the Southern California region, come check that out.
Awesome.
That sounds great. All right, Papa Stro, what you got going on? You are the man that has more going on than anyone I know.
Well, I know I mentioned in the previous podcast tonight, but I just want to thank Green Hero Films and the Hollywood Film Festival in Atlanta, Georgia, for showing my film documentary, The Maestro, tonight, Atlanta, GA. Much appreciation for that. I'll be with you, Dr. John, this weekend at the Camden, South Carolina Comic-Con, and I'll also be starring as a Christmas ghost in the reenactment of the Christmas story this weekend. Looking forward to that, and all the activities with the Camden Comic-Con. December 16th, you also join with you, Dr. John. You're going to be there, too, for the Charlotte Comic-Con at Embassy Suites in Concord, North Carolina, near the Charlotte, North Carolina area. CharlotteComicCon.com is where you can find the info, how you can be part of that. Also, the Rack Pack is out in stores, iTunes, and Amazon Prime. As we speak, the story of Daryl Rackling, the Rack Pack, I'm in it. Stars C. Thomas Howell, Randy Jones, the Village People, by the way, if you guys remember the Village People. He's in it. David Shifter, Tom Gore, great cast and crew. A fun film for the entire family, based on a true story. So I hope you guys can get a copy. And if you do, I hope you guys enjoy it. Things are getting ready, segue into Dust Series Season 3 coming up beginning this coming year. Really excited about that. And we'll be coming out with a trailer soon for that as well. Be sure to check out the Dust Series on the YouTube channel, D-U-S-K Series, in the YouTube search. You go straight to it. But latest in TV, wrestling, film, go to my official website, thestro.com. Just click on the merchandise link. Check out all the cool Papa Stro, Merry Christmas and Happy Holiday merchandise. Facebook at Stro the Maestro, Twitter at Sign the Stro, Instagram at Stro Maestro. Subscribe to my YouTube channel at Stro, second word Maestro, Stro Maestro, all together. And for Patreon, show some love for Papa Stro, patreon.com/Papa Stro. And it's been a really, really great pleasure to have you on, Jen, tonight. And everyone here, I've such a blast. So, boy. Thank you.
Awesome.
Jen, what have you got going on?
Well, we're in the winter time now, so we've got our cold temperatures. So we're kind of taking a break and having a rest-up time because we had a very busy traveling season this year. So we're having our rest-up time. But you can check out our website at shesquatchers.com, and you can check out our events page for anything that we've got upcoming and scheduled, which is more towards spring. Right now, we don't have anything upcoming. But if you'd like to schedule us for something, by all means, send us an email. You can find our email address at shesquatchers.com. And you can please like our Facebook page at facebook.com/shesquatchersofficial. And also our YouTube channel, shesquatchersofficial. So please give us a like and subscribe there.
And thank you. And I'll say join us next week on ScaryCast. Mark Sargent.
the guru on flat earth. We love you, Devin. Thank you, Papa Stroh. Thank you, Jen. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week
on
Scary Cast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.